Good evening from the beautiful mountains of Western North Carolina, just outside the Blue Ridge Parkway. I'm Jeremiah Greer, and this is Shadows in the Dark. Well, tonight we're going to ask, do you believe in Bigfoot? What tonight's guest does, and not only does he believe, but he claims to have video evidence, and he is also pushing for the legislation that will protect him. As I'm sure you all are aware, Bigfoot is one of the most legendary cryptids that is yet to be proven to exist. So in a few moments, we'll have Todd standing on the show to discuss the evidence and protection of Bigfoot. So first, we're going to start with a little news for you. Astronomers have discovered an Earth-like planet that they say is 5 times larger than Earth and orbits a red dwarf star. The researchers made the discovery using a 3.6 Metro telescope at the European Southern Observatory in Chile. It orbits a red dwarf at a distance of 1/14th of that from Earth to the Sun, and its year is just 13 days long. They've estimated that the temperature of this planet is between 0 and 40 degrees Celsius, meaning that water would be liquid. It is believed that the planet is either rocky or fully covered with oceans. Now listen to this one. In Cincinnati, Ohio, a man arrested for allegedly using a stolen credit card caught a break when he passed a judge's Bible quiz. The man's lawyer described him as a churchgoer in hopes that the judge would not set the bail so high. The skeptical judge asked the defendant to recite the 23rd Psalms, in which he did, and recited all 6 verses. The defendant was released with a $10,000 appearance bond. Now, I'm sure most of you have heard about the disappearance of the honeybees, which is becoming quite a concern. Well, the varroa mites have showed up in Hawaii now. Hawaii has been asking their beekeepers to restrict the transportation of the bees around the island. And since the importing of bees is illegal in the state, officials are not sure how the mites got there. In order to keep the infestation down, the beekeepers will have to use pesticides, meaning a possible end to certified organic honey on the island. I don't know about you, but this honeybee thing, it's a little scary. You think about it, without the honeybees, we don't have pollination. Without the pollination, ultimately, we don't have food. So something to kind of keep track of, keep a watch on. Now, here's a dream come true for one man. I'm sure most of you have heard of Stephen Hawking, the world-famous physicist who has been bound to a wheelchair his entire adult life due to ALS, or better known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Well, he got to experience weightlessness on a modified Boeing 727. Hawking hopes that this is a step towards future explorations for himself. The 727 climbed to an altitude of 32,000 feet, and then it made a parabolic dive, giving the astrophysicist 25 seconds of weightlessness. Hawking is known for his brilliance and groundbreaking work on black holes and the origin of the universe. So that's probably a dream for a lot of us, experience weightlessness, go up into space. I sure wouldn't mind going into space at some time. So if you kind of followed that story, that all happened yesterday. So, like I said, we're going to have Todd standing on tonight. He'll be talking about Bigfoot and the evidence he has collected, about his website, And he'll also talk about the protection that he is trying to get pushed for Bigfoot in Canada and the United States. So we'll be back in just a minute with our guest, Todd Standing. And Todd Standing is a documentarian who has been studying Bigfoot for the past 3 years. His team has observed and videotaped large primates in a remote mountainous region that he believes to be a species of the Gigantopithecus. Todd has compiled his findings into a mini-documentary titled Sylvanic and on his website at www.sylvanic.com. That's S-Y-L-V-A-N-I-C.com. He has led expeditions into the Sylvanic region, where his team has recorded 3 very persuasive videos of these animals. And Todd does his work in hopes that legislation will be passed in Canada and the U.S. to protect these species. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you coming on. I guess the first thing is, you know, you haven't been doing this for a long time, so how did you get interested in researching Bigfoot?
Well, I had a theory. I called it my hoax and mistaken identity theory, where I believe that this has just been a long stand. I thought it was a brilliant hoax originally orchestrated by the First Nations people just to, keep people out of a certain area, create this mythos, shadow guardians or boss of the mountain where people are afraid to go there, and then you don't have to fight for your land. And even they, I thought they stole food and had this whole, create this huge mythos that went on for decades, and then it just got translated into modern times, is what my original theory was anyways. So,
right. So now, when you went up to this region and you had your first sighting, did you believe in Bigfoot prior to this?
No, I didn't believe the possibility for a species this large to exist undiscovered. And I was just, since then, I've learned a tremendous amount, and I realized the ignorance of that position, because I was such a civilized person. I live in civilization. I was born and raised on cement, and I didn't know anything about the wilderness to the extent of, besides theoretical knowledge and biological understanding, being out there in the woods and, living there like the First Nations people did before we came here and like the animals that do now, it's a whole different world. It's a different thing. It's kill or be killed kind of thing, and it's only the strong survive. Those are the cliches, but to be out there and see it is a whole other thing, and it's just a whole different world. And we're just not aware of how much territory that we have in Canada and the U.S. that's just, uninhabited by human beings. There's a significant amount of space for these animals to live in, and it's not just a possibility. It's a reality. From the information and from what I've seen, I was the hardest hardline skeptic in the whole world, and it wasn't even the video evidence that convinced me. It was the other things that you see, that you witness, that you experience firsthand, that makes you understand that no other species, no bear or cougar or any animal could do the things that I witnessed. And it's that more than anything else that really convinced me that this is an absolute reality. So,
Well, so going into this as a skeptic, what was your first thoughts, when you had your very first sighting?
I thought that's got to be some kind of, it's got to be a man in a suit. This can't be, you know, like, the, you know, I just assumed that, the natives had, they can build beautiful outfits and headdresses and waterproof moccasins, and I thought it was well within their abilities to have this, you know, whole costume built up, but it's the athleticism, it's the things that transpired that no human being could do, no bear could do, and even the things that I experienced at night, like I said before, it didn't take, and the biologist that I worked with from Great Falls, Montana, he was, you know, he said, you'll just witness the things that I've witnessed, and once you keep going forward, eventually you'll believe. So, he was right. I absolutely do believe now.
So, on your first trip up to this region and what you saw, you come away pretty much 100% believer?
No, I think that was my fourth expedition, actually. We'd had three expeditions before that were entirely mm-hmm. unsuccessful. It's not, these are the most elusive animals on the planet. It's not going to be, like, you see a lot of these videos right now that are out there where people just, you know, walk out and look, dude, look, Bigfoot, you know, it doesn't happen.
Right.
Animals, if they exist, there's no arguing, they're the most evasive species on the planet, and you're not just going to fluke come by them. I mean, there's a possibility that some strange event could transpire that's going to allow you that, but just to walk into the woods with a bunch of people and, you know, making noise and whatnot, and you're going to stumble across these animals. That's not what happened with us. It took a lot of work. We had a strategy, and it was a tremendous amount of work and detail that we went through, and we were unsuccessful several times. So it wasn't just a one-time thing. And once we understood precisely what they do to evade people, we used that, and we, you know, got in a couple times and repeatedly proved that we can not just shoot them or not just get close to them and shoot them on video once, but twice. And the whole reason for that, initially, like, we knew this was going to be a big deal. And initially, all we wanted to do was take this evidence to forestry officers and say, look, quietly, we've made this discovery. Please come with us and, you know, help us make this discovery a reality. Let's prove this happens. And they did nothing. They will not help you. They will do absolutely nothing. This is entirely up to private citizens. There's no government agency you can go to. Believe me, I've tried. I've been everywhere. I was very reluctant to go public with any of this information until I realized it was entirely up to private citizens, which really kind of, you know, it's not a good thing. I think the government should step up and assist us with this. And even private citizens like private scientists or post-secondary universities, you know, Harvard, Princeton, all these people, you know, I'd like to get them on board. I'd like to get some huge scientist on board and show them what I've seen. And you know, as skeptical as they are, once they've seen what I've seen and seen the evidence that I have, they'll believe. And I need their assistance to make this this a reality, to scientifically classify this species, which is already actually classified as Gigantopithecus, and mm-hmm. just take the work from there. But to do it ethically, and that's one thing that a lot of people are not willing to do. You know, even museums in the past have funded expeditions to go, for example, to go kill the Chicago history or arts history, I can't remember the precise name of it, but they funded an expedition to go kill a panda and bring a body back. This is something museums do. You know, even in Britain, they're infamous for sending out people to go, you know, go execute some gorillas and bring back some bodies. And with this species, you can't do that because they live in communities. They evade people in communities. If you go out and you try to kill one of these animals, they're not aggressive, angry animals, but they'll defend themselves, as they have in the past. If you go out and shoot one, they're going to come back, and they don't leave their own behind. They're going to come back, and they're going to attack you. And I believe that the person who goes out and tries to kill one of these animals, to be successful, you're going to have to eradicate the whole domicile. And if that's the last known breeding population, congratulations. Not only have you proven they exist, you've wiped out the species. And it's that kind of ignorance that I'm really fighting against. So,
I definitely agree with that. So you went up to this area and you recorded three videos, right?
Yeah. The first video one was a huge learning experience for me. I don't actually have that video. I shot it. It's my video. It's not really a very good piece of evidence. It's just we saw an animal behind a tree, and you know, it gave the tree a shake to sort of scare us off, and then it's, you can see it running, crashing, and snow falling off trees kind of thing. But that video was taken by the videographer who was with me on that expedition. It was sold, and also he sold out the location that was our research site. So the Sylvanic region that we were researching the species has been entirely compromised. Men with guns showed up, tried to execute the species, and were entirely unsuccessful. and all this other, you know, garbage and malarkey had transpired. And I came to realize that since this discovery is worth millions, you know, people get dollar signs in their eyes and they want to go, you know, make this happen. And people will stab you in the back and betray you. And, you know, for money, when dollars come into play, people start to show their true colors and you realize who has integrity and who's going to stab you in the back. And at this point, I have a very small team of four people that have proven to me that they will not sell this out, and they believe in, you know, being ethical and the scientific study of this species. And we're all willing to take the time necessary because these animals aren't, they're not, you know, teleporters or aliens. They're real primate species. They live and die. With the proper time and the proper ethical research, we'll discover a body that's died of natural causes. We'll discover what they eat and that kind of stuff, and we'll scientifically do things properly and classify them. And I believe, my hope is to find a way to peacefully coexist with the species. So that's why I'm trying to get protection for them.
Well, so have you moved, since Sylvanic has been jeopardized, have you moved to another region, or are you still pretty much...
We're looking for another domicile right now. Luckily, with the amount of research that we did in the Sylvanic area, we really are able to identify a domicile now. And that's, I'll tell people how they evade. I'll tell people, you know, the little bit of superficial evidence that I actually know about them. But as far as specifics, I don't get into that because, I mean, that would compromise the species. If I told people what the needle in the haystack looked like, they would all go find it, and, you know, ignorance would just probably, you know, kill people and obliterate the species most likely. So, but since we have that knowledge, we know what the needle looks like in the haystack, and that's what we're looking for right now, is another domicile. And I really don't think that's going to be exceedingly difficult because, especially with the relationships that I've been on quite a few radio shows, like Coast to Coast, and I've been on lots of national TV shows, and I've met lots of scientists and people that know these animals exist, and they're coming on board with me, and they're starting to assist me, and I believe that I won't have a lot of difficulty finding a new domicile. And once that happens, before I can make my findings public, I have to have species protection and recognition. And people ask, well, how are you going to do that? Well, imagine this scenario. When I find a new domicile, my goal is, I have a Nobel Prize-winning anthropologist from Europe. This guy is a titan in the field of anthropology. He absolutely does not believe Bigfoot exists whatsoever. But he's agreed to come on my next expedition. Now I need to find some big field journalist from CNN or NBC who does not believe in Bigfoot, who thinks that this could not be a possibility. I'll take these two skeptics with me. And when they see what I've seen, and they watch me shoot a video for, and they watch me gather whatever physical evidence I have and come back with that evidence, I believe if I'm on CNN and they do a one-hour show about how this guy shot video for, I'll give them video for, and when they see what I've done and see what I can do and believe these animals are real, when I come back with these skeptics and they say, these animals are real, I believe that'll generate enough publicity that I will get protection for the species. And then after that, scientists will come on board and the proper people in the proper fields will, you know, do what needs to be done to ethically study and understand the species. So it's a huge discovery, but to be ethical about it, it's just going to take time, and you know, we're certainly prepared to do that because it's I feel it's a tremendous responsibility, and I take it very seriously.
Are you not afraid in any way that, you know, given it that much publicity and taking those kind of people out there, that it will, you know, in turn actually cause more problems?
Absolutely, and my team and I have said it many times, and I'll say it again, we're prepared to drop all our research and walk away from this if we feel at any time our research will jeopardize the species. But I have to believe that humanity can do this. I have to believe that this is a possibility because there's no arguing. I mean, habitat is being lost, and an animal species like this is, they probably have virtually no habitat left with the way we're just always encroaching upon them. And it's very likely, even though there's nobody can quote numbers of how many of these animals are left, it's extremely likely that there's very few of them left. So with that being said, and who knows what global warming and the effects of the what we're doing to the environment is having on the species. And I believe it's at this point, you know, either we give it a shot and we try to find an ethical compromise between humans and the species, or they'll just likely become extinct. So, and that's what my work is. And again, never, I won't even pause. If I believe my research will be in any way detrimental to the species, I'll just drop what I'm doing and I will just walk away. And I will just let civilization take its course with, you know, the species. So.
Well, yeah, you know, I definitely agree that, you know, humans are pushing on most habitats for animals. And, you know, we're taking up about every bit of space we can, and that threatens anything out there.
Mm-hmm. What I am certain of is I'm absolutely certain that in 2005 there was a domicile in this region that the First Nations people call Sylvanic. I believe there was a number of these animals there. Specifically, how many? I have no idea. I was aware of three of them that were day watchers, and I was aware there was a group that they were watching over during the day, and that they would forage and hunt and feed or whatever they do at night. So I would guesstimate, and this is something that I can hypothesize because I was there. I believe there was a minimum of, I would say, 10 of these animals in 2005, and there could have been as many as 40 of them in that area. So with that being said, there was at least that many left. To know if there were other populations around and whatnot, I don't know. But if to think that there were 10 animals, 2 years ago is at least something, and perhaps that's something that we can work on and build on. So although they have lost another habitat, which is very unfortunate, I really don't believe that was their last habitat. I think they have other spaces that they inhabit, and we'll be able to discover that. So with our research and understanding that we acquired from this region. So, yeah.
All right, now video two. Now that one's on your website, right?
Yep.
And I've got a chance to watch it myself, and it's definitely very interesting to watch. Can you kind of give us, what was going on at the time? What exactly happened when you caught that video footage?
Well, that's actually most likely a male from the main group that came back. We actually weren't trying to get him. We were actually there was the day watcher, a female day watcher we called Jane, who was coming back, and we were trying to capture her on camera. And she sort of went over the top of the mountains and traversed this. She just did this amazing rock climbing up the side of a mountain. And that's why he was actually standing there, as he was waiting to ensure that she was safe, because they were alerted to our presence. And as soon as they're alerted to your presence, they know that they're day watchers. They don't leave anything behind. And they knew that she was cut off. So they came back, and they went, as soon as they were certain that she was safe, he was looking up at her, and he saw, okay, she's safe, she's in no danger. Then he squatted down, and then he took off. So that's all you see him do, is you see him standing in a spot, and he was just looking, and we could hear the other female that was moving through the trees, and that's what we were looking at. And suddenly, oh my God, look to the right. There's something right there. So we didn't expect that. It was sort of a fluke. And that's all the video that we got that day. But it was still a tremendous success, because we got within, that was a good 30 yards of that animal.
Right,
and
yeah.
But that wasn't the best. The best of it was 2 days later, we shot video three, and that's not on my website. I just show that when I take my petition on the road. And that one was just beautiful. It was the day watcher we actually got. And there are stills of it on different spots all over the website. It's not on my website, but on my MySpace account, there's some stills of it. And I'll make sure those are put up in the very in a couple days or so. And those stills are just, and the video is tremendous evidence. Actually, it became probably the most significant piece of Bigfoot evidence ever, because every time you watch a Bigfoot video, it could either be a man in suit, or it's a new form of primate. There is no in between. You cannot. There's no other species on the planet that walks bipedally like humans do. So when you look at my video three, okay, it's either a man in a suit or it's a new species of primate. Well, I had a kineticist analyze the video, and kineticists are experts of the physics of motion, and he can tell you he works with track athletes and whatnot, and tells them what to do to move faster. Well, he analyzed the physics of this animal's motion and said the fastest man on the planet couldn't have done that run in 24 seconds, and that animal did it in 17. No special effects. He double-checked it. It's just plain raw video footage that was analyzed. So now when people look at the footage, they have to understand a man in a suit couldn't have done that. It's not a possibility.
How fast did they estimate this creature running at?
Well, you don't get that specific speed, because it slowed down and sped up a few times. But his analysis, he said the fastest man on the planet, like the best track athlete in the world, couldn't have done it in 24 seconds. So a 17-second run, he shaved off a good 7 seconds to what the fastest man on the planet could have done. And if that's a guy in a suit, he's wearing a suit, he's 7-foot-plus tall with big feet on him, and he just ran faster than that. If I could get a man to do that, he shouldn't be working for me. He should be out, running the Olympics and winning gold medals, right? And what people don't understand, something else that people don't understand about that, is not only did it do that, but it had just run 4 kilometers through bush and mountains. Like, if you run 4 kilometers and you try to run faster than the fastest man on the planet, it's not going to happen. And it's those feats of athleticism that are beyond any human being's capabilities that convinced me that this cannot possibly be a hoax. That has to be a new species of primate, because no human being could be doing that stuff. It's just, it blew me away with the things that I witnessed both with my own eyes and things that I saw or listened to at night. That just I just realized that this is a new species of primate. There's no way, there's no second way about it. Period. So, and that's not even video three, as great a piece of evidence it is, video will never be enough. A body has to be discovered. And that's going to take time. And I understand that, you know, it might take a year or two or three, or I don't know how long it's going to take, but I have the ability to get us there and to make it a reality. Take Bigfoot out of the world of paranormal and actually, you know, start to understand and classify the species and realize what it took to evade humans and modern science for forever. So
have you found any other kind of evidence up there, like a teeth, hair, or anything that showed where they may dwell?
Well, we just remember when we were out there doing this. I mean, it's a hell of a trek to get in there, and you know, you start running out of food, and you realize you're gonna not have enough food for the hike back. Basically, our only goal was to, first of all, not disturb the domicile, because mm-hmm. the biologist that I was working with, he had a domicile that he discovered about 15 years ago, and there was a hair sample found from that domicile that came back as an unknown species. And as soon as that happened, people went in there and the animals left. They lost that domicile. And he knew that he didn't want that to happen. So our only goal was to get enough evidence to show to a tranquilizer gun expert, a forestry officer, that would come back with us on our next expedition and tranquilize one of these animals. That was my goal. Until I've learned since, you don't tranquilize these animals, you don't shoot these animals. Because the First Nations people explained to me, it's like tranquilizing a grizzly bear cub. Well, a grizzly bear mother doesn't understand that you don't mean to hurt the cub. She's going to mm-hmm. defend and fight for her cub. And it's not one mother that's going to come back. It's the whole group that's going to come back. And it's not grizzly bears. It's bipedal animals that are twice the size of gorillas and most likely twice as strong and extremely adept at their habitat. They just come out of nowhere. Just like a great example of that is that movie Harry and the Hendersons. At the end of the film, if you watch that, you know how they just come out of nowhere?
Yeah.
That's exactly what we experienced. These animals were, like when we shot video three, the animal was behind this very skimpy little nothing of a tree. And my partner is going, he's right there. He's standing right, he's yelling, it's right there. And I go, I can't see nothing. I'm pointing the camera. And suddenly, when we took a step towards it, boom, this huge animal starts sprinting out from behind this tree. And I'm thinking, it was standing there looking right at me. And I had, I could see nothing. And when you watch the video, you look at it and you go, there's nothing there. And then suddenly, boom, right out from behind the tree, and a skimpy little nothing of a tree. He was standing right there looking at me the whole time. And when you realize that these are the dominant animals in that area, you know, if you go mess around with grizzly bears, you know, it's scary stuff.
Oh, and, yeah, definitely.
These animals are by no means aggressive. They did nothing ever in any way, shape, or harm, even though we definitely antagonized them, I would think, and were in their habitat. They never did anything to hurt us or harm us, and, you know, I'm very thankful for that, obviously, because spending one night in that region was probably the most terrifying experience of my life. If you can attribute it to thinking that there are grizzly bears wandering around outside your tent, and you don't know what these grizzly bears are capable of, whether they're going to eat you or not, you know, it's when you get there, I don't care how tough or brave you are, it's a scary experience. It's very, very scary, and not something I intend to repeat ever again, but I certainly was never harmed or even threatened in any way, and I think that says a lot about the species, because human beings certainly aren't like that. If you go into somebody's house, they're going to shoot you, you know, you go into somebody's property, and they'll put a bullet in you. So, you know, I really appreciate that, you know, no harm came to us, so.
Well, you know, with that being said, you know, I guess it would be safe to assume they're really intelligent creatures, you know, able to evade us for, you know, I would say thousands of years.
Well, people have put that question to me a lot, and you know, I do have my own theories just because of my own personal experiences, but there are birds that look intelligent. There are birds that if you go near their nest, they'll tweet at you and make them chase you. And I mean, that looks brilliant and intelligent, but it's not. It's just a bird, and he's not really that intelligent, and there's nothing really complicated about it. I think they have a specialized sensory perception, because in the Bigfoot community, it's very well accepted that these animals are nocturnal. They do things at night. So they have to have some sort of night vision ability, and that might carry over. If they can see thermal, then and that carries over into the daytime, then, you know, if you're approaching one of these animals, it doesn't matter, unless you're wearing a thermal suit, which nobody does in the wilderness, they're going to be able to see you coming from, you know, miles away. but just the way they inhabit themselves in the mountains, they simply strategically place themselves where anybody approaching from any direction is very viewable to them, and they simply back away and go alert the main group, and they move off. They know their habitat, and does that really demonstrate high intellectual prowess? Well, I don't think so. It just demonstrates the ability to, even perhaps maybe more so than anything, the knowledge that they know to stay away from people shows more intelligence than anything else, because I know what we've done to this continent in the past 300 years is appalling. 200 million bison wiped out. You know, wolves are gone. Grizzly bears in the United States don't exist anymore. Like, this was a thriving ecosystem for tens of thousands of years, and in, you know, 100 years, we just eradicated it. And them having knowledge enough to know to stay away from people that do that, perhaps that, more than anything, demonstrates intelligence. So.
Oh, very true. Well, I'm sure, you know, with the video and you know, everything you present on your website, I'm sure you get the people that come up to you and, you know, swear up and down that you're doing nothing but pulling off a hoax. What do you say to these people?
Well, a hoax to get protection for the species, a hoax so I can take my film out and get signatures for protection for the species, or even all the proceeds from all of my showings go to back to animal rights groups. There's really, and I've been offered many times. I mean, you can imagine, I have the most conclusive piece of Bigfoot evidence ever, even not necessarily as clear or as good-looking as Patterson's, because my animal is sprinting off away from me, but, you know, I have one of the most conclusive pieces of Bigfoot evidence ever, and I've been offered money on several occasions. I've never even considered taking it, because I won't be a flavor story of the week, and I will only use this Bigfoot video to get protection for the species. So if I'm hoaxing, I am hoaxing to get protection for Bigfoot. I am hoaxing to give the money back to animal rights groups. And I'm not saying believe me or take my word for it, because I certainly wouldn't. What I'm saying is give me the opportunity. Even forestry officers, I'll tell you this, even forestry officers that don't believe that these animals exist have signed and support my petition, because they're sick of people coming in. Every time there's a Bigfoot sighting, men with guns show up, and they start shooting at things, all saying, oh, I thought it was Bigfoot. Eventually, somebody's probably going to get killed in the name of, oh, I thought that he was a Bigfoot. So even with that being said, forestry officers support me, even from their position that it doesn't exist, because that has to be the official position of forestry officers in Canada and the U.S., is officially these animals do not exist. So officially they can do nothing to protect them, and officially they can do nothing to go and assist in the capture or proof of the scientific discovery of these animals. So, but they still support my petition 100%. And people, you just wait and see what I'm going to show you, because I mean, keep your ear to the website, because my evidence is significant, and I will do this. I'm going to. Nobody's ever repeatedly come back and said, not only have I done this twice, I will do it a third time. And when I want to do it a third time, I'm not going to go out just with myself and do it, you know, with a couple of my friends. I'm going to go do it with people that do not believe, and that's sort of ticked off some people from the Bigfoot community, people that have been doing this for 30 or 40 years, that want to come on my expedition, and I have to say, well, I'm sorry, but no, because you're a Bigfoot believer. That does me no good to have a Bigfoot believer come out and believe that he saw Bigfoot. I need to take somebody who says there's no way, that it's not possible, that I don't believe it for a second, and that's precisely what I'm going to do. And when I come back, I guarantee you, when the people come back and they've seen what I've seen, they'll say, I believe. I mean, no human being could have done that. When you witness the things that I've seen, it's just the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. And the next piece of video evidence that I want to have, I expect that I'll do it in high definition, and I'll expect I'll get within, you know, 30, 40 yards again. And this time we have to come back with physical evidence. There's no qualms about it. I'm going to need the physical evidence. I'm going to need fecal. I'm going to need whatever hair samples I can get. We'll have DNA darts that we'll use. These DNA darts from DNA... from tranquilizer guns, they don't make a gunshot when they shoot, more of like a puff, and the DNA dart will take a piece of the hair and skin and blood and then fall out of the animal, and hopefully they won't see that as an aggressive attack upon them. We'll ensure that we do it in a way where it's not like we're firing a gun at it to try to hurt it, and because again, I don't want to antagonize them and be attacked by them, because suddenly you know, Bigfoot starts kills a human being in defense of itself, and it's always the animal that's at fault. Some bonehead goes in and feeds a grizzly bear a hamburger, and he gets killed for it, and he does something stupid like that, and the animal always ends up suffering for it. And, you know, we're going to ensure that we don't make those kind of mistakes. So, because nobody in my crew wants to die. Nobody.
No doubt there. No. Well, what do you recommend if somebody is out there and they do see a Bigfoot?
Appreciate the experience of it, I guess. Really, actually, what I would tell people is always think about the circumstances. Because if you just saw a Bigfoot, you just saw the most elusive animal on the planet that successfully evaded men for since we've been on this continent. And what happened? What did it did it fall out of a tree? Because that's what I did. I started analyzing the specifics of our encounters and of the region. And when I came to the proper conclusions and the proper analysis of what precisely had transpired, I started to put two and two together, and I realized, oh, that's what they do. Oh, that's how they do this. And, you know, if you're real serious about it, people are smart. That's the difference between us and every other species on the planet. Think about it. Deduce the situation. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Be like Columbo. Go over things over and over and over again. And, you know, luckily for this species, the only people, and there are a lot of people that know these animals exist. The people that have made the discovery have had people that have been wise enough to make the discovery have had wisdom enough to understand that these animals should be left alone. And with that being said, luckily nobody that's been greedy and just out for a buck has been smart enough to really break down, or I shouldn't say that, I apologize. People are smart enough, it's just they haven't been lucky enough like I have. I earned the respect of First Nations people. A biologist found me who was just absolutely brilliant and had more knowledge about Bigfoot domiciles than I ever could have possibly imagined. And then I had a knowledge of a domicile. It was those three things, those three really lucky events that came together that made me successful and have the knowledge that I have today. So
now the First Nations, this has been part of, you know, their culture for years, right?
For forever, pretty much. I mean, there's, out of all the dialects of First Nations people, there's not one single language that doesn't have a word for Bigfoot. Bigfoot, Oma, Savanak, Momo, like every language. And it's always now in hindsight when I look back and I was such a skeptic, these people that had been here, that lived harmoniously on this continent with all the species that were here, every single one of these people believes, this isn't a mythical legend to them. This is an absolute factual truth. They were actually taught from the age of children how to coexist with these animals, what you do if one of them, you come across them or one of them attacks you or that kind of thing. And, you know, and for us to come along, us that are from steel and concrete, that just built cities and don't know really anything about the woods other than, you know, the weekend warrior kind of stuff that we do, to tell them that, oh, yeah, you have words, you think these animals, yeah, no, you're crazy, you're out to lunch, it's a myth, it couldn't exist. And they just, you know, and you get that back from them. Well, how dare you insult me? You who have come here and, you know, and eradicated the harmony and the nature of this whole continent, you're going to come here and tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about? So, and even for any scientist to say, well, that doesn't mean anything, that's unacceptable. Any anthropologist who's going to go up to the people that have lived here for over 20,000 years and tell them that these animals are part of their culture, part of your language, you believe in this wholeheartedly, to tell them that this is just your, yeah, it's never happened, it never was real, that to me is very it's very ignorant, and it's arrogant to do that. And I'll be the first one to put my hand up and say, that was me. I didn't, you know, I just didn't. And my research and the knowledge that I've had of this species carried over to the knowledge of the actual known and scientifically classified Gigantopithecus is, I was never certain of the Gigantopithecus theory until people started doing research and studying that Gigantopithecus, most of their bones were found in mountains. And people ask, well, how come we've never found, you know, bodies from these animals? Well, you know what? We know that at least 100,000 years ago, Gigantopithecus was a real species. It's precisely Bigfoot. I mean, you look at the drawings and the statues that they made, it looks just like Bigfoot. But in 6 million years that we know this animal existed, we have never found anything other than molars and a lower jawbone. We've never found a skull or a hand or a foot or anything in 6 million years of known existence. So this isn't a new thing. And if you look at the fossil records we have of human beings and chimpanzees and gorillas, we have a skull almost every 10,000 years,
right,
dating back to 4 million years. You look at Gigantopithecus, We have nothing. We have teeth. We found, I think, 3 lower jaw bones and thousands of teeth. Other than that, we have zero knowledge of the species. We don't know if they were quadrupeds back 100,000 years ago. Well, but there's the more research that I do, it's just every time I find out a new thing, like they did a electron microscope analysis of the teeth and started to discover what they've been eating. And it was like a slap in the face to me. This is exactly the species I'm studying. Every time they found it, they found most of the bones in a cave that was 100 feet up the side of a mountain in China, almost an untraversable rock climb. These animals lived in this cave, in the mountains. And it just slapped me in the face, because all I have knowledge of is Rocky Mountain Bigfoot. I have no knowledge of how they would survive in prairies and swamps and where a lot of sightings are. And it just was a slap in the face to me. I bet you if I went to China, and I really do want to do this and go where they made this discovery of Gigantopithecus bones, I bet you I would find the same evidence of domiciles that I'm finding here in North America. So, you know, it's the evidence, when I start piecing it all together, it's a puzzle and everything's fitting into place perfectly. And it feels like, you know, every day, slap in the face. Oh, my God, I found out new information. I had a Chinese gentleman, a doctor from China, who was involved in the research, telling me stuff, because he believes I really made this discovery. And he's telling me stuff that isn't made public, and it just fits precisely into what I know about the species. And I'm talking to him through a translator, and we're just going, this is unbelievable. I have the same findings you have. This is the same species. And the evidence that it is Gigantopithecus is just overwhelming. And it's really exciting and scary at the same time, because the responsibility of what I have to do is, I take it very, very seriously. So
you have plans of going other places to do your research other than, you know, doing it in the Rocky Mountains?
No. I think that there will be a day when I really would like to just pass this on to great scientific minds who will come on board with this, and I'd just like to go back to being just me, and just because I'm not a person who enjoys being in the media, and I like educating people and that kind of thing. But I really like, you never hear a video of mine called the standing video, like there's the Patterson film, right? It's always Sylvanic, and I attribute it back to the people and that have originally made this discovery. Like Sylvanic is a derivative of native terms, so you know, call them Sylvanic videos. For me, I would just like to. I'm not that kind of, you know, newspapers and all the big media stories and being on TV. It's not something that that I would enjoy doing and to keep up. I don't want to be the Diane Fossey of Bigfoot. That's not entirely my goal.
Do you have a regular job, or do you do this full time?
Well, I've devoted myself to this for the past 2 months. 2 months ago, I quit my job. I was a pasteurizer. And before that, I mean, I was a chemist and a physicist, and, you know, I've had quite a few different jobs. Always something scientifically minded kind of thing. I've always liked to challenge myself, and this is just the most exciting thing. I mean, people can you imagine finding proof that there really is a bipedal primate? The most man-like primate on the planet is alive and exists right, you know, 200-300 miles from your house, is living in the wilderness, and you know, it's just amazing. It's such a huge discovery, and it's really exciting and scary at the same time. So that's why we walk such a fine line, and we're always you know, very careful about what we say, because I mean, people want to know where the Sylvanic region is. And I say, why? Well, there's no answer. These animals don't exist there anymore. And even if they did, why would you want to go there? Why don't we just leave them alone? Like, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get protection for the area so I can give it back to these animals and they can have that habitat again. Because the region, I'll tell you, is in the middle of bloody nowhere. I mean, even we were going to get a helicopter to take us out there. It's barely in helo range. And then with all the currents and stuff in the mountains, you can't get there. It's basically, you know, it'll always be an area that's uninhabitable by human beings because it's just so far in the middle of nowhere. There's no reason this area shouldn't be given back to the species. And, you know, even with that being said, if we can just leave them in that one spot, perhaps they could have a colony of, you know, 200-300 animals there and just leave them alone. And, you know, that's ultimately my goal. So, and you can imagine, I could sit here and tell you about for 4 hours about how I've been lied and deceived and cheated and played out so many times. And, you know, when big dollar signs, when something's worth millions, you know, people will just come out of the woodwork and try to do everything they can to capitalize. And but that does not discourage me, because I do believe in humanity. I think we have a great future. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of work, and we can't just sit idly by and say, you know, it's okay that we're, you know, destroying our planet. We have to stand up and do things, but we've done it in the past. We stopped destroying the ozone layer, and things that people thought were impossible, we've kind of overcome them, and I have to believe in my own people, otherwise I should put a bullet in my head, you know? I believe that humanity can do it, and I believe there is a solution for things. And sometimes people say, well, it's impossible. I hate that word. It really bothers me when people say that. I don't think anything's impossible. I think just with the right time and work and effort, we can discover things, and there's a reality of things, and just because something's implausible doesn't mean it's impossible, you know?
Sure.
And that's just the way I think, and I want to know one day I can look my children in the eye and say, you know what? I fought for this and I did the best I could, and maybe I won't be successful, and maybe this can never happen. But at least I tried. I wasn't the guy banging his fist on the table saying, it shouldn't be that way. You know, I got out there and I fought for this, and I really did the best I could, and just knowing that there are people out there like me that do stuff like this, that, you know, Al Gore's out there, you know, with the Inconvenient Truth, trying to, you know, save the planet, and there are thousands of people that are following him, and changes are being made, you know, so... I just don't want to give up on humanity. I really believe in it, and I think we have a fantastic future, and I want to be one of the people that fights for it. So,
well, you always want to think the good of everything. I mean, you know, that's no doubt. You know, what exactly do you hope this legislation does if it's passed to protect these animals?
Well, the first number one thing it'll do is now when I go to the forestry office and I show them my evidence, they have to help me. They have to come and assist me. They have to go public with what they do. And that'll be really significant, getting forced, because these guys are trained, they're experts, they do this stuff for a living, and even the amount of money that it's going to take to do this properly. Like, I'd like to build a tower that's like 10 kilometers in the air and study these animals thermally from, you know, 20 miles out. We have the technology, even with satellites, we could scan and see what they do and how they do things and start analyzing things. And you know, the only people that can do that are billionaires and governments. And that's what needs, I don't have the ability to do that. I mean, even just something as simple as thermal imaging, we're going to get thermal cameras on my next expedition. But I mean, that's, you know, that's like $4,000 or $5,000. So, you know, these things cost a lot of money, and I'm just a regular guy. So, you know, I hate to say it, but there's a financial cost to this. And even long-term research, there's got to be funding for it. I'm not going to get funding for some, you know, paranormal Bigfoot thing. Until it's scientifically classified and a reality, scientists cannot get the proper funding to study things, because there's funding for everything. There's funding to work on dolphins and study whales. Governments pay money for that. Institutions pay money for those studies. And until there's some kind of recognition, and that starts with the government, then that'll never happen. So that's what will come from government protection. And there's already protection for them in Skamania, Washington. They started it, not me. It's actually the United States, first place. And after, there's protection in Skamania, Washington. It's illegal to kill a Bigfoot there. It's a $50,000 fine, and I think two to five years in jail. It's illegal. And why, you ask them why they put that up there? Because there were jerks wandering around with guns, shooting at things bipedally. It's also, they've also made an amendment to the law, though, that states if you shoot a human being thinking it's Bigfoot, you will go to jail for murder. You will not be able to have the Bigfoot defense. Oh, I thought it was a new species of primate. That's garbage. Even if it's a man in a suit, you do not have the right to kill that person. It's obviously, you know what I mean? So, because that very well may happen someday. Because, you know, there's a lot of hoaxes going on. A lot. I'll be the first one to admit it. It's part of the difficulty for me to get recognition. It's because there's so much crap out there right now, people that are blatantly hoaxing. And, you know, you're out there with your, you know, a couple of kids are out there with their buddies, and they got a Bigfoot suit on, and they're shooting a hoax video, and a hunter comes along and blows one of them away. That's murder.
Right,
going to jail.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people should be made aware of that, because they're not. Because I see it every day. I just had some guy email me yesterday. I thought I saw something running on two legs. I started firing. Well, you know what? Yeah, it could have been a tracker out in the woods, you know. It could have been a lot of things. Even if it was a bear. What the hell are you doing? You don't have the right to shoot at a bear. It's not hunting season, you know. And I hear stories like that every single day, and it scares me. You know,
it's
all done in the name of Bigfoot. So, you know, I think something needs to be done. And people should never say, oh, you can't get protection for a species that doesn't exist. That's garbage. This is a government of the people, for the people, by the people. If the people want protection for this species, they will get it. You phone your congressman, you sign a petition, you get a million signatures, and they better well, damn well, make a law for it if the people want it. It's not up to the government, it's up to the people. And if, and that's another thing, too, is if I can't get enough signatures for my petition, if people don't really care, then obviously I'm just going to go, you know, go back to my day job and forget and say, you know what, I did my best, but obviously people just don't care. And I don't believe that's true. When I've had three showings in Alberta, and people come out, you know, hundreds of, I get a percentage of the population that come out. I get tremendous support. And, you know, it's the media that's a little skeptical at times because they've been hoaxed and lied to so many times.
Right.
And I understand their skepticism. But when somebody sits down with me and has a conversation with me, they realize this guy is not kidding. He's,
well, you're very convincing and definitely very passionate.
Yeah, and you know what I'll say to people? You know, I love the skeptics. What would you do? Me saying that, actually, just about 2 months ago, my team and I didn't realize this. Someone said, why don't you go find them in a national park? They already have protection there. It was like a slap in the face. You're not real. Why don't you just go to a national park? I was like, that's brilliant. And that's now all our research is going to be focused in a national park. With that being said, now that I've thought about it, well, national parks are very inhabited by people. People are there all the time, you know, and doing so. It's very unlikely an elusive species like this would exist in a national park. But still, we'll give it a shot. I found a few national parks that are very uninhabited by people, and we're going to go. That's our first places we're going to look, because you can't take a mushroom out of a national park. You cannot have a gun in a national park. Mm-hmm. If I find the species there, it's automatic protection. You can't shoot anything out here. There's no hunting in national parks. So, you know, that's entirely going to be our goal. But, you know, until somebody, you know, slaps you in the face with that little bit of knowledge, it was just so obvious, you don't really take it in consideration. And my skeptics are my favorite people. They say, why don't you just do that? Why don't you just do this? And it's like, that's brilliant, thank you. You're not real because you didn't do that. Oh, I didn't do that. But you know what? I am a human being, and I do make mistakes. And I would thank them for pointing that out. And all the skeptics in the world can look at my research and start treading through my stuff. They have to realize that in the beginning I didn't believe in Bigfoot. And my research from 2004, you know, I was talking about a missing link and a wild man in the woods. And people take that evidence and go, well, look, you didn't even believe it. You're right, I didn't. That's in 2005 I shot the videos, right? If you look at the timelines, you know, it makes sense. This has been a journey that I've undertaken, and I've learned a year and a half ago I was going to go tranquilize one of these animals. I would have died. The First Nations people have a word for it that I've translated loosely. It means take your last breath. You shoot one of these animals, you take your last breath, because they're going to come back and they're going to kill you for attacking them. And every animal, every species has a right to do that. If you took a cute little squirrel, cute with this little tail, and you grabbed it, that animal would rip your hand and bite you, because that's what animals do when they're attacked. If you kill one of their own, they're going to defend themselves, and they have the right to do that. We all do. And, you know, that was a mistake I made. I'll be the first one to put my hand up and say I was going to tranquilize one, and, you know, I probably wouldn't have. We were actually there on our expedition to go and tranquilize one of these animals. We, you know, we had like flares and stuff, right? And we had like bear bangers and that kind of stuff. It wouldn't have done any good. If you tranquilize a grizzly bear cub, you can have all the flares in the world. She's going to kill you. She's going to come back and she's going to kill you. She doesn't give a rat's butt what you have. The only way you're going to stop her is by killing her. And we had nothing. We had other you're going to shoot a Bigfoot's charging at you because you just tranquilized one of its friends or mother or father, you tranquilize him, he's going to get you before that takes effect, you know? And that's what we were going to do. Luckily for me, I'd lost the research site at that point. The research site had been sold out. People had had an incident there. And luckily for me, when I went to go there and tranquilize one, the animals were no longer there. And, you know, that's just a piece of luck that I just have to tip my hat to God above and say thank you for that, you know? A lot of times I go, you know, this is some of the things that happen are, you look at it and you think, oh, it's a terrible atrocity that these animals are no longer in that area. But in truth, my team and I would not have survived. We would have been, I believe that wholeheartedly, we would have been killed. And, you know, it was perhaps maybe a good thing that they lost that habitat so the four of us would survive to go on to try to protect. It's almost like we owe it to the species now for sure because, you know, we're alive and I want to protest the people. Don't make that mistake. Don't try to tranquilize one of these animals because they evade people in communities. I'm telling you, they're not going to. An animal like this would not be able to. That's why you see bears all the time because they live alone. They're singular animals. Cougars, you see them all the time. If cougars lived in packs and wanted to evade people, they would. They'd have a little strategy and they'd evade you. Bigfoot, like every other primate, exists in communities like all primates always have. They evade people together. That's why we haven't found a body, because one of them falls or one of them gets hurt, the other ones come and help him. That's just what they do. If you shoot one of these animals, even with the best of intentions, you go tranquilize one of them, they're not going to understand that. What are you going to say? Hey, no, he's not dead. He's okay. No, you just shot him. He's lying there on the ground. Now I'm angry. And any animal will do that. Every animal will do that.
Right, yeah, everything's going to protect their own.
You throw a net over them, it's going to be the same result, you know? I don't know.
Right, well, we've got about 3 more minutes here, and we were going to take a few callers, but instead I'd received a couple emails and with a few questions that, you know, some of the listeners wanted to ask. One of the ones I actually heard you on Coast to Coast, and I'm sure you're familiar with bugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the listeners want to know, get an update on if you're going to go out with Bugs to, let me just kind of tell them the story. Bugs, he was in Texas as a farmer. He went out hunting with his buddies around December, January, 76, 77, and they saw what they thought was a bear, shot it, and they ended up shooting 2 of them in the long run, just kind of make, a long story short here.
Mm-hmm.
Scared them. They were afraid that they were going to get in trouble for it. They definitely didn't feel they were human, and but they weren't some kind of gorilla or ape or anything. And keep in mind, this is in Texas. So they buried them, both bodies, beside a creek. He drew a map of it, and he's pretty much kept it to himself and select few. And I know you were on Coast to Coast and actually got the chance to talk with Bugs about this. So, the listeners just want an update on where this might stand.
Let me see how I can explain this. I have no desire to make big news and make a big deal about anything. What I'm going to do, just like I've done with everybody else that's ever participated in research, told me about a chronicle, told me about their information, is I'd like to prove to this gentleman that I am for real. I'd like to find a way to earn his respect and his trust, and show my true colors to him. And I think once if I can earn his trust and respect, I think that that'll say a lot, and he'll trust me to not go back on him, that things won't fall apart, and I won't allow anything to come back to him. And that's just what I've always done. That's why I've been a success, and I think that that's exactly what I'm going to do, is I'm going to try to earn his trust and respect somehow, and give him the information that he needs, show him whatever data he'd like, because I don't think there's too many people out there. I hate to say this, I don't think there's anybody out there that really has the knowledge and understanding of the species that I do, even from not just the wilderness perspective, but the scientific perspective. And I'll give him all the information I can, and I will do everything I can to earn his trust and respect, and see if he'll the first thing I would tell him, or I'm telling him, is that don't he wants to wait till he passes on and then reveal it after. I'm saying, if I find a body, I'm going to use that to get protection for the species. And, mm-hmm. you live in fear, and he's terrified of even the animals themselves coming back in retribution. And don't live in fear. I'm, for lack of a better term, the expert in this situation. And let me show you that this terrible tragedy that happened, I can make it into a good thing. I can have something great come of it, and that's species protection, proof of existence, and understanding of the species, and I'd like him to be alive to see that. I think that would be a great thing, because what happened when I heard it on Coast to Coast, if you heard me, I was shocked. He's telling me he smelled blood, and my first reaction, I'm just thinking about the horror of it. What a terrible situation. And just like I've always told people, you kill one, another one comes charging at him, you got to kill the other one. That's precisely what would really happen. That's the most valid thing about his whole story, is that these animals stand together. And I even my team and I started to analyze precisely his whole scenario, and we really started to understand what happened and how the whole incident transpired, even just because of our knowledge of the species. And that's what I'll do, is I'll try hard to... I'm not going to make anything I do with Bugs public, because I want him to know that I don't care about publicity. It means nothing
to me.
Good. I don't care about being famous and recognition. I do care that I'll try to earn his respect, and when he begins to appreciate that I am a man of my word, which is rare in this day and age, that he'll possibly learn to trust me, because he's going to have to trust somebody. Right. And trust is never given away.
Well, I hate to say it, but we've just got very few seconds left here, so we want to thank you for coming on. I mean, been a wonderful, you know, talking to you. Definitely very intriguing. And if you'll give your website one more time for us.
It's sylvanic.com, and that's spelled S-Y-L-V-A-N-I-C.com.
All right. Well, Todd, we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fantastic.
Thank you. All right, that was Todd Standing with the protection of Bigfoot and his evidence. Again, you can check out his site, www.sylvanic.com. That's S-Y-L-V-A-N-I-C. And we'd like to thank everyone who tuned in for our show on blogtalkradio.com. And thanks again to our guest, Todd Standing. You know, if you want to check out our website, you can go to easternparanormalinvestigators.com. That's all one word. And our email is shadows@easternparanormalinvestigators.com. You can access our host page at blogtalkradio.com/shadows-in-the-dark. Music tonight was provided and composed by Shane Greer, and if you would like him to help you out with your show, you can contact him, Paris, P-A-R-I-S, Paris 6875 at hotmail.com. That's Paris 6875 at hotmail.com. Again, we thank you, everybody, for listening to Shadows in the Dark.
Shadows.